what sensation is really, is what all about. The phenomenon of sensation, meaning whatever we experience or feel, whatever we are feeling, meaning experiencing in this world, begins with sensation. The whole mental phenomenon begins with the element of sensation. So what that means technically is we are mentally touching things. For example, when you are looking at me, that cognitive process, so you look at me and then you know it's Sudhir, or you see something, a form or whatever you see. That seeingness, that cognition began the moment you mentally touched me. You see what I'm saying? That is sensation. It's a visual sensation. Similarly, there is audio sensation. There is a sensation of the flavor, sensation of the smell. And then there is a bodily sensation, the sensation of the touch in the body, embodiment. And most of the psychosomatic disorders and most of our reaction, in my opinion, is related to that bodily sensations. We are constantly reacting to bodily sensations. For example, when you see pizza, what happens? The moment you see it, that means that is a mental touch. What is mental touch? Matter and mind are coming together. And that's where experience begins. Cognition cannot arise unless matter and mind meet. So sensation is a meeting place for body and mind, for materiality and mentality, for non-living matter and living matter, animate matter. So the moment you see that pizza, there is a mental touch, because actually the eye consciousness is going and touching the object. And we will talk about that further. But as soon as it touches, there is a feeling. Sensation leads to feeling, and we have talked about that. And that is a pleasant feeling. And we react to that pleasureness and grab a bite. So it is not the pizza that is making you eat it. It is that pleasureness which is arising in the embodiment, and we are not being aware of it, we react and we grab it. So if you extend that further, that's why there is addiction, right? Why people smoke and why people drink? Because the moment they see beer or even think beer, you have that kick. There is a sting in your embodiment. That sting is what makes you grab another bottle, another six-pack. Same is with smoking, same is with any psychosomatic disorder or eating disorder or whatever disorder there is, really. It is rooted in our inability to catch that sensation. It is rooted in our inability to become aware of the feeling which arises out of that sensation. Similarly with anger. So when somebody is mistreating us or misbehaving, or when something doesn't happen the way we want, there is an unpleasant feeling in the body, in the embodiment. And so we react to that unpleasantness and not to the other person or a situation or circumstance. We just don't feel good, and then we react. So everything is happening here, not out there. When we know that experientially, that's the key, not just intellectually, experientially, then we will stop blaming the world, right? We'll take charge of ourselves, we'll become a leader. And what is the definition of leader? The one who leads himself from unwholesomeness to wholesomeness. That's leadership. But that can happen only if we can develop that sixth sense we were trying to understand experientially. You know? I mean, you're not touching your hand with a hand, right? But you can still feel it, right? Why? Because you're actually mentally touching it. When you felt that tingling sensation there, when you felt that warmth there, you're not like touching like this, right? Your hands are right there, but your mind is touching it. That is the sixth sense. It's directly related to mind consciousness. If we develop that more and more and more and more, then we become less reactive, more equanimous. That leads to creativity, invention, and all kinds of extraordinary things. That understanding of mental touch is very, very important. Like in that pizza example, not only you feel pleasure in the body, but your mouth starts watering, right? I mean, you haven't grabbed that pizza and actually eaten it yet, but still the mind, the mouth is watering.
Especially when you're hungry.
Especially when you're hungry. So how is that happening? You haven't touched it to your tongue, but how come mouth is watering? Because there's a mental touch there.
This is not pretty natural that when you are hungry and you see the food, your mouth
watering. It's natural. It is natural. However, how do we not react to it? Meaning, okay, mouth is watering. How can we still make a wholesome choice? Meaning, how can you still go for like salad or maybe just one slice of pizza and not like one full medium size?
Yeah, I understand that if you are not hungry and you see some food you like, right, your mouth should not water.
Well, that will happen.
Yeah.
In fact, it will eventually happen when you are established in the awareness of sensations and feelings. Eventually, mind will not water.
It just wants to eat.
Mouth will not water. Because now you're not reacting anymore. In fact, watering of the mouth is manifestation of the reaction. Isn't it? Feeling a sting when you think of beer, and I still feel it when I'm like thinking right now, oh, beer, yes. Cold six pack. Why that is there? Because in the past, when you drank it, it felt good and it created that volitional formation, that mental impression. It's like the memory. And it comes up the moment the eye consciousness touches the bottle, the moment the eye consciousness touches that piece of pizza.
Is it because of the memory?
Correct. Exactly. It is. That is where the reaction is rooted in. Memory is one, is not really the very pure technical term. It is the volitional formations. It is the subconscious. It is the karmic imprints, the mental impressions that are happening. And memory is actually a manifestation of that. It is the memory means the functionality of karmic imprints or the mental impressions. You know, just like we have wet clay and you put pressure on it, there is an impression there. Mind is like that. Every experience, every interaction between the world creates an imprint on the mind. It's a very natural process, and we will how that happens. Actually, let's talk about that right now, since you brought up the memory issue, and we'll get back to this little later, but how those mental impressions are created, how that storehouse of karma is created, and how we are constantly driven by that. We call it subconscious. The psychologists call it subconscious. The Eastern philosophers call it karma, or stored up karma. The theoretical physicists or cosmologists would call it volitional formations. Just a different way of expressing the same phenomenon of creating mental imprints. Okay, so let's go back to that pizza example. So there is this nice pepperoni, mid-size good aroma there. So the moment you see it, what happens is there is a sense enabling consciousness which arises. It is a sense adverting consciousness which leads to eye consciousness. So even before you see it, something is happening. It's called the sense enabling consciousness. That enables the eye consciousness to arise. Meaning, you are looking at it, but you are not seeing it until the enabling consciousness arises. And then you see it. Because the eye consciousness arises independent of the organic eye. Okay? So you have this organic eye, and there is this eye consciousness, EYE eye consciousness, in dependence of the organic eye and the subtle eye matter which is inside the eye, the consciousness will arise. Which is preceded by a sense enabling consciousness. The moment you see it, another consciousness arises called receiving consciousness. So the eye consciousness will see it, then there is that data, visible data. The receiving consciousness will receive the data. The investigating consciousness will investigate it. What is it and all that. Determining consciousness will determine what it is. So from the moment you see it to the moment you know that it is pizza, actually many things are happening. So
Sam, how about someone from a different culture that doesn't know what pizza is, has never seen it before? They will have a different reaction or response than you and I who know what pizza is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very good point. Yeah. Because, see that determining consciousness? That's the key. The moment the determining consciousness knows it's pizza, boom, there is a craving for it. And that craving is the field of action, mental action, or we call it karma. So any karmic action is always preceded by a determining consciousness. So what action we took here? We grabbed the bite, which is actually called craving. It's a mental action. It's unwholesome consciousness. But if you don't grab it, if you just look at it and decide to do something else, that would be wholesome consciousness. Both are karmas. Both are mental actions. One is unwholesome, one is wholesome.
What makes it unwholesome?
Sorry?
What makes it unwholesome?
Our inability.
If you're hungry, I would think that eating is nutrient.
Yes, you eat it, but not with craving. Meaning you're not going to eat the whole pizza.
Okay.
You're not going to eat crazily. Yeah? You might have one slice and then you can have salad with it. So you have a nice wholesome diet.
So it's a question of balance then.
Yeah.
It's a question of choice making. It's a question of awareness. It's a question of wholesomeness. It's not just with pizza, with anything.
Right.
Now, if it's a beer bottle, then you would make a wholesome choice of not drinking it.
So what you're describing is the sense of that instead of being a robot and just automatically reaching the medium.
Absolutely.
If you eat the pizza, you do it because you're conscious that you're choosing.
Absolutely. Choice making is what this field is. Between steps 6 and 7, we make all our choices.
So
determining consciousness for the foreigner, it won't recognize that as pizza, so obviously it won't lead to an unwholesome choice of grabbing it. And now what happens is once you eat it, right, there is a mental impression, registering. It feels so good. And it registers that feeling, that impression, which next time when you see it, it triggers the craving. See what I'm saying? So, sure. So what we're trying to do is, this is only what we can do. Everything else is happening automatic. You can't do anything about it. It's the law of nature. The only thing we have is right here. It's called the gap. Many of the philosophers, you may have even heard the book, The Gap. This is the gap where everything happens.
That's where you make choice.
Absolutely. Mental action. And so depending upon what you do, you will have a corresponding impression.
So take your time over there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and whatever we are doing here, we are doing for this. We are trying to train ourselves to make a wholesome choice or do a wholesome mental action or to arise wholesome consciousness.
That was my point. Where do you break the chain? So 1 through 5, it just happens.
It's automatic.
And 6 is where, for example, in case of addiction,
right.
That is where you become aware of what's going on in 1 through 5.
Right.
I have one question. So it's applicable to any activity, anything like you enjoyed in the past, you want to do that again and again?
Everything. This is the fixed order of consciousness. This is how cognitive process occurs. We can't do anything about it. Just like Earth revolves around the sun, you can't do anything about it.
And we think registering is where what happens in the determining stage seems dependent on what has happened in past registering stages.
Right.
And so you can untrain yourself, or train yourself differently, I suppose, reprogram, by considering the action you just took.
Absolutely.
So there's some feedback built into this that will affect future actions. Like his question about what's wholesome or unwholesome.
Right.
At some point, you have to decide what's good for you, and you make your decision on what's wholesome or unwholesome, and you consider that at the registering stage, so you're prepared with that information as you spin back around the loop again.
What is wholesome is wholesome, what is unwholesome. That is not a choice. For example, greed, hatred, delusion is unwholesome. It's law of nature. You cannot say, I think greed is good for me and I'm going to make that choice. No. If you make that choice, you're basically made an unwholesome choice.
Who determines what's wholesome and what's not?
That's a very good question. And it all depends upon your ability to experience the feelings, get in touch with the feelings. In general, what is unwholesome doesn't feel good.
Well, but that doesn't fit with reality. People get drunk, do drugs, they do it because it feels good.
Right.
Initially, even though it may be long-term self-destructive, but
they
don't do it because they feel bad. People get high because they like being high.
Correct. Now, feeling good is a very subtle thing. When you feel good before and after, that is feeling good, and we went through that after effect one day, that if you're not feeling good as an after effect, then
okay.
It is not good.
So the hangover is not feeling good.
Absolutely. No alcoholic will feel good after six-pack. Guaranteed. It's law of nature. He may feel good while drinking. Why? It is not actually a good feeling. It is a constant, consistent reaction to his craving. Mm-hmm. That's what is happening. That's why sting. Sting is a very subtle thing. It's actually not naturally a good feeling. It is a bad feeling in disguise. And that's why the after effect is so bad. That's why you never feel good after a six-pack or when you're drunk. Similarly with smoking.
Yeah, any example. Given hunger for that matter.
Right. While you are angry, you feel great, you feel so powerful, you know. But it's disguise, it's a unwholesomeness or bad feeling in disguise. Because after anger, you always feel miserable.
Yes, definitely.
Always miserable.
Some people feel better if they're angry. They feel like it's been an emotional
injury. It's a winning for them.
Pardon me?
Some people feel pretty good. They thought it's a winning for them. They want something like.
No, it's a very good point, and it is always the area of discussion. Because greed always feels good. You get a big check from your client, it feels good. You can't deny that, right? And you want more and more. But guess what? If you have very subtle understanding of actual phenomenon of greed, and if you observe it as a pattern, the software engineers understand the meaning of patterns and processes and trend. At that moment, it may not be feeling bad, but as a trend, it always feels bad. If you look at a pattern of feeling, and in nature, most of the things happen as a pattern. It is a trend to things. So an alcoholic, on an average, is never happy because he's not feeling good. A smoker, maybe he's feeling good as he's smoking because of craving. But on an average, as a pattern, as a trend, he's not feeling good. Otherwise, why would he would be sick, right? Why greedy people are not happy? As a trend, in general, you know, if you're a software engineer, you may be able to contribute to this point that you always look for patterns, right? And that's what determines the real nature of things.
You talk about greed, it's very interesting because it's where you come from. If it's a sense of scarcity, which is what greed is really about, there's never enough. But on the outside, someone like, say, Bill Gates, is he greedy or is he simply wealthy?
I mean, right.
You could look at that two different ways because he has a lot of financial wealth. But did he come from a place of insufficiency? Or was there abundance?
Right. So when I say greed, that doesn't mean you shouldn't make any money. Craving is greed. Creativity is not. For example, if Bill Gates was to keep all the money that is coming to him, and greed has the quality of stickiness.
Stickiness?
Stickiness.
Okay.
So if And it's a natural phenomenon, and that's why mind has this constant tendency to cling on to things because of the subtle element of greed.
Attachment,
yeah. Okay. So if Bill Gates were to simply generate more and more money and just store it and just use it for himself, that would be greed, okay. That would be craving. But if he is using for creativity, then it is not greed.
Or to give away.
Right. In fact, a lot of people make a lot of money, but there is a free flow of money. So when there is non-greed, there is free flow of money. When there is free flow of money, there is creativity. And I see that a lot between two people having same amount of money. A greedy person, a billionaire greedy person is not as creative as a billionaire non-greedy person. And generosity arises out of non-greed, and that's why, you know, somebody like Bill Gates spending $100 million to vaccinate African countries. However, he's not completely non-greedy. Okay, you also have a spectrum of greed. It's not like this, either greedy or non-greedy.
Okay.
Everything is in spectrum, right? You have 10% greed, 20%, 30%, 40%.
Degrees.
Huh? Degrees of greed.
That's
right. So he is greedy in terms of wanting Microsoft to be the number one software company. Mm. That is manifestation of greed.
Okay.
But he's also non-greedy to the extent that he spends a lot of money in research. You know, you really need certain sense of non-greed to invest in research. A lot of billions of dollars are invested in research. It comes through the mentality of non-greed, free flow of money, investment. But when it becomes too greedy, then it turns into capitalism. And that's another whole area of study there. But that registering is what the subconscious is all about, is what the storehouse of mental impressions is about. And the important question here is, well, the important point here is to understand that this is happening for all of us. We all are cognizing in the exactly same way. The order of consciousness is exactly the same. Every time we are cognizing something, it's exactly the same. For example, let's talk about taste. We talked about vision. So how cognitive process occurs in the phenomenon of testing something. Testing is an experience, right? When you test something, you're experiencing something. So what is happening? So you have the organic tongue. Then there is subtle matter, is actual subtle matter called the tongue sensitivity that is in the organic tongue, then there is flavor, like a cake or chocolate, right? There is that flavor data, it's the external data, okay? And then there is the water element. All three, all, if there was no water element in our embodiment, we wouldn't be able to taste anything.
Why
can't it, water element, it's the actual, not the actual water, but the quality of water, which is cohesivity, which is connectivity. And we have to get into those elements later on. But unless that is there, or you can understand this in terms of sound, for example. I cannot hear you unless there is air element. If you talk in vacuum, I can't hear you, no matter how sharp your ears are. Similarly, you cannot taste unless there is water element. So that's the matter part. So matter is always external, internal. And then mind is the element of attention, always. Now, attention is very interesting. Attention is the element which vibrates the subconsciousness. So, it's like this, you have this life continuum, subconscious field, right? Nothing will happen unless there is attention. Okay? So, if you are sleeping, obviously you won't be able to eat, right? Because there is no attention. But the moment there is attention, it awakens the subconsciousness and makes it conscious, which is what that sense enabling consciousness is all about. It begins the cognitive process. So literally, if this is subconsciousness and boom, there is attention, there is the vibration of the subconsciousness and the cognition begins. That's how the element of attention functions. And then it is so subtle that it actually vibrates the subconsciousness for precisely two mind moments. And then we can get into all that science later on. And then that leads to each consciousness in the fixed order. And the whole cognitive process takes about 17 mind moments. And each mind moment is so incredibly fast that you cannot even comprehend.
Like nanoseconds?
Even faster than that. Like electricity, we all know that current means you have about 640 million electrons passing per second. That's what creates an electric current, right? How many? 640 million. Yeah, we should check that number.
Yeah. But it's a lot, right?
It's a lot. Now you multiply that by several hundred. That's how many times the consciousness is coming and going. Just like the electrons are passing and creating electricity, similarly the consciousness are coming and going, coming and going, coming and going, and creating an experience. So, anyways, so you need matter, you need mind, and you need consciousness, test consciousness. Now the question is why, and you can analyze this, for example, tongue sensitivity. If I say that there is some very, very subtle taste matter in the tongue, it's actually matter which tastes, which facilitates testing. And we can think it this way, why we are not able to taste with our eyes, or why we are not able to taste with your hands, or any part of the body, why just there?
You actually taste with your nose too.
Taste with your nose?
Yeah, because what happens when you bring something to mouth, the chemicals from the material is inhaled, so part of the taste process is not just in the mouth.
Predominantly, that would be smell, but it may also be contributing to taste, and they're all interdependent, they're all conditionally arising. So, but predominantly, similarly with the eyes, why you cannot see with the nose? Why only eyes? Because there is that subtle matter. And I'm not talking about nerve endings or neurons that are in here, but it's this subtle eye matter. It's called eye sensitivity, because of which the consciousness can arise. A blind man cannot see. He has eyes, right? In fact, some of the people have beautiful eyes, and I used to read for blind students. I did that service for some time, and some of them looked beautiful. You know, they were beautiful people, you know, beautiful eyes, but they were not able to see. Why?
Something between the brain and the eye itself is not connected? Or?
It's the absence of the subtle eye matter. See that? So they have the organic eye, okay? Visible object is always there. Visible data is abundant. You have light, right? But they still can't see. Why? Because the subtle eye matter is not there in the eye.
How about the other side? How about the people that are blind that actually have visions in their mind without external vision?
Yeah, that is the sixth sense we're talking about. Yeah. So that confirms the existence of eye sensitivity, right? A blind man not being able to see, that, and we are able to see, even though we both have eyes, means there is something unique inside the eye. Okay, that's one thing. Second is, close your eyes. Can you see me?
Mm-hmm.
Look, can you see me as visible data?
Okay.
Can you see me as visible data, meaning form? You can, right?
Well, I can image my mind of you right now.
That is the sixth sense. That is mind consciousness. That we will get to later. But you cannot see me unless your eyes are open.
In the present time, the moment.
Yeah, right. Or you cannot see any object unless the eyes are open. What does that mean? The eye consciousness cannot arise unless there is an eye. See what I'm saying? Consciousness cannot function without the matter. This is very important to understand. Can see only if your eyes are open, only if there is light, only if there is subtle eye matter, only if there is attention. All these things have to come together to facilitate that experience of seeing. All these elements have to come together to facilitate any experience, any cognition. There has to be matter, there has to be mind, there has to be consciousness. All three combined together, we call it the soul. I like to use the word soul for it. It's a phenomenon, it's a term used to denote the three distinct but conditionally arisen interdependent phenomena of matter, mind, consciousness. Why it is important to understand that you cannot see without matter, mind, and consciousness? Because we have to remove that delusion of seer. I am seeing, I am thinking, I am smelling, I am tasting. When we see, we feel that we are seeing, but guess what? It's just a phenomenon. Seeing is seeing, it's happening. In fact, once you go deeper, you'll realize that you're being seen. When you realize that you're not thinking, but you're being thought, is incredible transformation. Incredible. It removes the grip of delusion, which makes us so miserable, you know. Because ultimately that sense of I, sense of self, is responsible for all our craving, all our aversion, all our striving, all our rat race, all our self-centeredness, everything. When we realize that, when we're establishing that, we slowly develop dispassion, sense of renunciation. That doesn't mean giving up and running away or anything like that. Dispassion is a spiritual quality where there is no more fever in our living. People are so feverish, so passionate, craving, constantly running after something, achieving this, achieving that. There's almost this hysteria in our lifestyle, isn't it? Moms want their children to do this, do that, A plus, and then they want swimming, they want this, that. We want to make more and more money, millionaire, then multimillionaire. Then we want to expand our social circle, and then we want to become famous, and we want to become known, and then on and on and on. It's like a fever. You know, it's that hysteria, melodrama. all goes away and we live peacefully, happily, because dispassion arises. Creativity arises in dispassion. In the nature, universe is so creative. And when you see a flower blooming, do you feel that it is striving to bloom? No, it just blooms. That effortlessness, you know. Because there's no striving there, no craving there. It just happens. Birds, you know, they just fly. They're not like, you know, striving.
It's like species evolving. Mm-hmm. It's just happening without actually knowing.
Exactly. Effortlessness brings perfection in action. When we do something effortlessly, we are more effective, very obvious, you know. Right? If we do something as a play or as a hobby, like if you're in a mortgage business and you just do it as a hobby, as a play, effortlessness. So it, instead of, I want to become a $1 million club member, like I, 12 hours a day, you know? You might work very hard, but the results may not be very good. It doesn't mean you should not become a member of the $1 million club. You will become a member of the $1 million club if you effortlessly work.
In fact, a lot of entrepreneurs, the accumulation of wealth has just been a residual effect.
Mm, absolutely.
They were passionate about something else. So that's where I think not greedy about accumulation of wealth, but being passionate about something they really care about.
More active parameter is effortlessness. If we do something effortlessly, then we are obviously able to work 14 hours a day without getting tired.
Same thing. If you have passion, then only it would be effortless. You know, if you have something in you that you want to continuously do, and no matter what, you just don't feel tired. That's when the effortless.
But passion is not foolproof. Passion can lead to greed and craving and attachment. But this passion is foolproof. Very subtle. You can do the same thing with dispassion, or you can say non-attachment. Same thing, you know. It's foolproof.
Now you're in the arena of systems engineering. You know, you meet the need.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, what you've done is a functional breakdown.
Right.
And you've, with your examples, allocated it to certain things.
Right.
And it's done in a way that meets the need, you know, which is devoid of passion, dispassionate. So I've got a feel for it, I think.
Wonderful. So let's contemplate next whole week on what we discussed. We'll continue. Thanks.